Hello, thank you for downloading this mini podcast. This week I went to the University of Sunderland and I gave an hour's talk on child and parent violence for the training organisation Children Who've Experienced Loss and Trauma. What I've done is I've cut a little bit out of that just for people to listen to, but also to get an idea of what I'm going to be talking about with Scott Cassin-Rennie on the 12th of July for We Are Family at Islington Town Hall. I'm going to put links to that in the description, so if you would like to come along and you're available and free, then please get in touch with them and book yourself a place. I hope you enjoy. Thanks very much for listening. Why are we not talking about this? Well, as a parent or a foster carer or a kinship carer or an adoptive parent, it's never mentioned in the preparation we get. I do Skills to Foster, which is kind of a three-day course, six sessions around what you can expect from children, what you can expect. It's never mentioned. It's not a subject that's discussed. Stigma, victim blaming. Who's ever been to a supermarket and seen a toddler have a tantrum? Well, who's ever been to a supermarket and their toddler's had a tantrum? My reaction, and even though I would consider myself to be someone who's slightly enlightened about children's behaviour, my reaction is to go, where's the parent? What's the parent doing? We look at children's behaviour and we go, who's in charge of this child who's having a total freak out because they can't have Peppa Pig ham, or the ham's the wrong shape, or the yogurt's the wrong shade of blue? And we've all been there, but our instinct and society's instinct is to go, where are the parents? Or where's the carer? And you know, the carers are kind of like, Oh no, not me. So we blame children's behaviour on their parents, and there's kind of an appropriateness, you know, there's an element of that's right, because we expect parents to moderate children's behaviour and train a child the way it should go. But actually, if your child is the child that can't be controlled, and there's an underlying issue, then perhaps you don't want someone to come and go, well, you know, I guess your child did try and hit you with a chair, so what are you doing wrong? You go, well, I don't want that conversation, you know, because I'm freaking out here anyway. Child protection. Actually, if you tell someone like a social worker, I had to sit on my child this week, as a social worker, what are you going to do? What are the social workers all going to go? Well, hang on, she's six. Why would you do that? Because actually violence becomes really murky. People don't just stand back and let themselves get punched or hit or let their house get trashed. They step in. And when you step in, people get hurt, children get scuffed, bruises, people get, you know. Now, children, like social workers, are trained to listen to children, and that's their job. So the child says, my dad sat on me. I'm 8 years old. And everyone goes, why did he sat on you? He sat on me to control me. Oh, that's even worse. But the other side of the story is that my child had a broom handle and was trying to hit me with it. So is that an appropriate response, to sit on a child who's trying to hit you with a broom handle? It's kind of a proportional response, isn't it? So parents, don't talk about it. It's tricky because you're worried. Because it's a terrible thing to fall into the hands of a child protection system. It's not, you know, it is a terrible thing. It's a frightening thing. You lose control of your home environment. You lose control of your life. Right? Adolescent to parent violence. Actually, you don't want your child to be criminalised. For all they're doing this, you don't want your child to become the naughty child. You don't want your child to have a criminal record. You don't want your child to be put on special measures or tabbed or ASBO or whatever the latest thing is. So as a professionals, I've mentioned that already. So we talk about a lack of awareness. We never thought of it as a thing. If people are not talking to you about it, then you might think that it's an isolated incident, that this is a one-off. Now, after a few years and you've had three or four one-offs, then you see it's not a one-off, it is a thing. Lack of tools or responses. As a professional, there's sometimes that temptation to go, I don't know how to fix this problem, so I'll kind of look away. You know, and there's that, I mean, that's being really frank as a professional. Sometimes you know, the phone rings, someone says you something, and you go, I wish I hadn't picked that phone up. You know, social workers on the duty team, you know, 5 to 5 on a Friday, looking at the phone, don't ring now. You know, it's a lot of nervous laughter. But it's the reality, sometimes you just don't want to know. So there's an element of people kind of trying to reframe it differently. And also, social work, generally, none of us want to criminalise children. You know, even as a professional, you don't want a child to fall into the hands of the criminal justice system. Because actually, the Home Office guidance on adolescent to parent violence says that actually, if an adolescent strikes their parent, you should report it to the police. That's the Home Office guidance. So, you know, a 13-year-old punches a wall or pushes a parent or slaps a parent or whatever, kicks a parent, in theory, you should report that to the police. So professionals are kind of going, well, actually, that's a sledgehammer to crack a walnut, or is it? I don't know. But we don't want to criminalise children, young people. So that's, I think, why it's a taboo and it's not very often discussed. I guess a straw poll, who here is knows of a child or knows of a situation where a child is violent towards their parents? That's at least 50%. So actually, it's a thing, isn't it? It's a real thing. It's not just a one-off family situation. Now, you could look at that and say, well, is that permissive parenting? Parents who are kind of going, hey, whatever, man. We didn't put any boundaries in, so now they're punching me in the face. Or are you kind of going, it's the other extreme. It's parents who are kind of going draconian, really black and white boundaries that are totally inflexible that a child is straining against. Or is it something else, like we talked about earlier? Is it a child who's actually, it's a strategy for them when they feel out of control, that fight, flight or freeze mechanism, actually they are programmed to defend themselves. But actually they feel threatened in a situation that actually isn't threatening, which is tricky. So, how would you define it to a colleague? I've got a couple of definitions here. Actually, 1979 was the first time it was we can find in the literature where it was described as parent battering, which is an interesting turn of phrases and it is of its time in the 70s. It says, any harmful act by a child, whether physical, psychological or financial, which is intended to gain power or control over a parent or caregiver. Now, I think I have a problem with that in some ways, in that there's an element of a child making a conscious decision to try and gain control. Because I don't think that is always the case. I think that might be the case for some children. That intent is a really tricky issue. Because a lot of children who have experienced trauma, in a moment of stress, or in a moment of anxiety, or in a moment when they do not feel safe, they react. Now, a reaction is not intent. In that moment of reaction, their intent is to do that, is to gain power. But it's a strategy for survival for that child. So I'm not particularly happy with that definition. I need to write my own definition, like I've got the time. The second one, which is a more recent one, behaviour that is considered to be violent if others in the family feel threatened, intimidated or controlled by it, and if they believe that they must adjust their own behaviour to accommodate threats or anticipation of violence.